Welcome to The Colorcast, a show about color grading, color science, and post-production. We are the Coloristos. I'm Jason Myers, a colorist in Los Angeles.
And I'm Juan Salvo, a colorist in New York City.
And I'm Josh Pitok, a colorist also in Los Angeles. And we wanted to talk this week about supervised sessions, things that go on inside of the color room when you have clients, how you talk to your clients, how you open them up in order for you to understand fully what they need from your color session, how you can make things look as much as what they're envisioning in their minds. So I'm interested in this subject to talk to Juan about it, because I know that a lot of the time, Juan, you're doing commercial sessions and stuff like that, where you have your big room that sure. you're viewing in. So it's what are some of the techniques that you have
what I do is, the first session with a client, I take out a watch and I start dangling it in front of them, and I tell them they're getting sleepy.
There you go.
And then I offer them snacks.
I thought you were going to say, you dangle a watch, you go, this is how much it's costing per minute.
Let's make a count. No, it's nothing like that. No, I think a rapport with clients is a really, probably, I think, the most critical part of a colorist's job in terms of what the client actually sees, right? If somebody is coming to you and they're sitting in the room with you for hours at a time, you need to be able to kind of manage the way that they're working, and also manage kind of their experience. And you're as a colorist, you're a critical component of whether they walk away feeling good about the session, feeling good about the time they spent with you, feeling good about the result or not. So there's a ton of parts to it, but I think the biggest part of it is having a read on people is incredibly important, and it's something that you can only really develop over time. I think my experience as an editor was tremendously important for my ability to work a room as a colorist, because as an editor, you have a lot more time in the room with clients. So when you're cutting a show or cutting a commercial or cutting anything, really, you're going to spend days upon days upon days with a producer, director, writer, production team in the edit room, doing everything from kind of fighting out the way the cut is going to play, to agreeing on stuff, to trying different things, to kind of trying to get everybody onto the same page, which is actually a really important part of running a color session, is getting everybody to get a little bit of ownership and getting everybody on board for a final product.
Yeah.
So I think that time was really important. It's something where, as an editor, you have a lot less pressure, because you're not doing something in 3 hours or 4 hours or 5 hours or 10 hours. You're doing something over days. You know, as a colorist, you measure your time in hours.
So did you set up your room specifically to read different people too? Because I know everybody has a different setup in the room. Sometimes the clients are in front, sometimes the clients are in back, sometimes the clients are to the side. So there's a bunch of different theories as to where the client is physically going to be as well.
Yeah, I think so. In my room, I have a little bit of a kind of to the side seat that people take, and then I have a sort of table and client desk in front of me, which is where I think you can probably fit. We regularly keep three chairs there because it's a pretty long table, but you could fit maybe four people comfortably in that space. And then there's a little bit more seating further down. So the way it tends to work is generally what happens is, when I have a client that's going to be kind of more active or involved, or wants or is more interested in what we're doing in the color session, like a DP or something, or a very detailed director, they do tend to kind of sit to the side of me, where more the agency people or the producers will sit in front and just kind of usually go on their laptop, and they'll be sort of interacting sparsely, as opposed to really really focused interaction during the session. I think it might be a little bit different for TV as well, Josh. I think you have sort of client attend review sessions when you're finishing up a show in your own line of work, right?
Yeah. The thing is with that too is, for me, there's a lot of there's some supervised times, and there's also a lot of time that I spend on my own setting things up, getting things ready. So it's kind of half and half as well.
Sure.
So I have a bit of time that I can flesh things out, figure out where the problems are. And the good thing about that is somebody can come in, I've already worked through most of it, mm-hmm. and I can say, okay, here's some questions that I have. You know, what time do you envision this scene taking place? What I noticed a couple of these problems here. Were you going for something like this, or do you think that you'd rather do something more like this? So that really helps. And then we can, you know, tackle a bunch of the things with that in mind, and then, you know, go through it from hour one until the end of the show. So that's kind of a nice thing about the workflow that I have right now. But if I'm doing like a music video or something like that, usually it just kind of we kind of just work through it from getting it and getting the general idea of, okay, what were you going for on this? How far can we take this? A lot of those ideas.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I do music videos as well, and of course we do features, and we've even done some TV. So I mean, I find, like, with the commercial stuff, it's sort of unique in that generally with commercial sessions, creative directors are sort of the point person in the session, and they tend to have some concepts, some ideas, or at the very least some concerns that they come in with that are kind of an immediate point of address, right? They're worried about, they thought the wall was a little kind of flat or boring in the shoot. They want to make it more interesting, maybe add a little contrast, maybe do a little ramping. But or the really fun sessions where they come in and they have like a really specific reference. They're like, we want it to look like this photographer, and here are some examples of the photography that he's done, and we want to make, you know, make the reds rich, or we want to make, you know, do this desaturated thing that he's doing, or this very flat thing that he's doing, or she.
Okay, here's a question for you.
Sure.
So that I get that a lot too. So mm-hmm. they go, oh yeah, we'd really like it to look like this, and they've handed you 5D Mark II footage that's way underexposed, and you're right. Like, well, I mean, that's always the problem that I have is, how do you tell somebody that, hey, you know, this was kind of screwed up. Like, we did something here. The footage that I got, it's going to be really difficult to make it look how you want. I always, no matter what, will give it 110% and try to give them everything that they want. But mm-hmm. sometimes it's really difficult because they're really asking something. It's usually the ones that are for free.
Right.
I'm noticing that too. Usually, well, the ones that are, you know,
They also think they're doing you a favor by having a very clear idea of what they want, right? They're like, I'm not asking for you to give me 18 different things. I want this one thing. And there's a mismatch between the concept of what they want and what's actually possible, right? They don't necessarily understand that a lot of what goes into the making that image look the way it looks in that reference was a lot of the set design or the production design or the camera that it was shot on,
right,
or the way it was lit. Like, there were a lot of other factors that fed into that look than just, you know, your grading session or the grading session. So, I mean, with the commercial clients, that's less of an issue because they are generally pretty experienced. You know, they're not hiring homegrown DPs. They're generally hiring experienced DPs who know how to light and know how to shoot a scene. And they're hiring art directors, and or they have art directors on staff, and they're hiring production designers, and there's a lot of thought put in throughout the process and to how the commercial's going to look, right? Those aren't the scenarios in which you generally have a 180 degree change of how the image is supposed to look, unless it's something that is concern that they're trying to deal with. So you might have to do like day for night and things like that, which we've had to do on spots before.
You also brought up a really good point of like, who is the final decision maker in this process too? Because we're talking about DPs and directors and, sure. You know, I got to give credit to Pat Inhofer. I heard this years ago in one of his talks. He was like, the most important thing you can ask at the very beginning is, who is the final word on the look of this? Because you could work, you know, hours and hours and hours on this stuff,
and then the person responsible is not there.
Exactly. And they go, what do you mean blue? No.
Well, you know, it helps when you're dealing with the commercial sessions where they're, you know, they're paying you, and it helps that they don't want to waste your time either, because that's their money. I think when you're dealing with kind of the lower budget stuff, then you do have that hazard, right? But But generally, there aren't that many people involved in those things. If you're doing a low-budget music video, it's going to be the director's going to be there, and he's going to be kind of the one that sort of signs off on it. And there might be concern with what the label wants or something like that, but generally, it's going to be the director's call.
Right.
I've not had that experience where it was like, you know, the person that was really ultimately making the decision wasn't in the room and the thing turned into a disaster. I think it's a little bit of an awkward thing to ask at the top of the session to say, all right, who's in charge? It's something you should be able to kind of figure out, but it is a little bit of a detective strategy. And in a perfect world, you're making everybody in the room happy and everybody in the room owns it a little bit, so that then when it goes out and gets reviewed by whoever else, and there's always, you know, the end client who's got to review it, or there's always somebody who's got to review it, if they have ownership of what you've done and they feel like they owned the decisions that went into making it, then they're going to defend it from their end too, right? So I think that helps. It kind of puts you on the same team with the people in the room,
right?
And that's what you want. You know, you want to be their cheerleader. You don't want to be, somebody they can blame issues on. You know, you want to be somebody that they feel like really went to bat for what they wanted and gave them what they wanted. The politics in a commercial session, I think, are really different from the way the politics work in a feature session or the way they work in, I think, in like short films, or if you're doing music videos, which are basically short films.
Yeah.
Those dynamics tend to work a little bit differently. And I always find the thing I find is I always like, I like having as a colorist, just as a person working, I like having somebody in the room that is actively involved in what we're doing, has opinions, has thoughts, has feelings, and expresses those, even if they are counter necessarily to what I might think, or I might not 100% agree with them. I like that at least I know I'm making them happy if I give them something. Right. And if I can take something that they want and make it good, then all the better. You know, I like that. As a colorist, I'm much more critical of the image than I think most of the people in my room are, right? So
yeah.
I'm much more critical. I'm like, oh, you can really see that window, or that key is imperfect, or the blacks are a little bit too crushed here, or they're a little too lifted. We should just drop the bottom of this. Those kinds of building on or refinement of an idea is what I can bring to the table in those situations where somebody has a very clear cut and opinion of what it should look like, and I'm executing that for them, then what I can offer to them is that refinement and that level of expertise that I can bring that they might not be able to get on their own, right? That's what my right. offering is in those situations.
I mean, for me, what I usually do too is what I'll say is like, do you think that this looks a little too green to you? Or do you think, and to me, a lot of that time, it ends up helping people own a lot of it too, because it feels mm-hmm. like they're driving it. So I'll say, oh, how do you feel about, you know, maybe we can make this do this, or we can, you know, we can make, we can window this person's face off here so you can focus more on this here.
Yeah.
Then they'll start get you opening up and getting a little bit more involved as well.
I think what our clients want in a session is they want to feel like we're working quickly and efficiently to get what they want. They want to feel like we're making an improvement on their image and we're making it look great, and that we're catching issues and avoiding things that are going to be an issue down the line, right?
Right.
And so if you can hit all those three things, and they're kind of sometimes they're opposing things, but if you can hit all those three things, then I think you have a pretty good chance of making your clients happy. Yeah,
I know, Jason, you've done some projects where you have some collaboration with other people. Like you have like shows that are collaboration with visual effects, and then you have that you're doing the color on as well. So how do you work that? Because you got footage that you're kind of using from other people, as well as you're running the session too. Is there any like major challenges or?
I would break my the people I'm working with into two groups. There are people that are actually you know, directors or DPs that have known for a long time. And so our biggest thing is not so much trying to feel like we're efficient in the room or that we are, you know, creating any camaraderie. It's kind of like how we quickly communicate things so that we can get through the stuff that we need to accomplish. So, you know, a lot of people do this, but, you know, you sort of build that lexicon up mm-hmm. between you and your clients. You know, for instance, I have a buddy of mine and he loves to say desaturated, but he doesn't actually mean desaturated. He's a director that I've worked with on a bunch of his stuff. And what he actually means is cool. Like mm-hmm. as in lacking red and orange. Uh-huh. And so he actually thinks, you know, sort of in his mind of a cool blue, let's say, thriller type situation. He does a lot of detective and spy type stuff, you know, in that vein, let's say. And he always is saying, oh, more desaturated. But what he actually means is this idea of, you know, let's go blue.
Yeah. Sure. I would say if you're in front of a browser right now, go to Alexis Van Herkman's website and look up how to talk to a colorist. Because there's a lot of good things like Jason's just describing here. Like, doesn't always what they're asking for isn't always what they mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So there's those things. And then I would say the other major angle would be like what you guys were talking about. Like, I have a lot of people that I've only worked with, say, once before, or they're brand new. And so in those sessions, it's not only how can we be efficient, but how can we make sure that we are comfortable with each other artistically? You know, that we're taking care of each side of our, you know, sort of bargain. You know, I'm the colorist, they're the creative, you know, in the room, and that I'm helping them accomplish what they want, you know. So those are the two different sides of the sorts of people I see. So
sure, I think that there's a the language of color is kind of is generally an emotional language, and it's a little bit kind of unclear. You know, two people can see the same use the same words to describe something like saturation or coolness, and so they can both say saturation and actually mean two different things, right? And I think that that a lot of a big part of what we have to do as colorists is sort of learn to interpret or analyze how people are what people are actually trying to say to us. And so sometimes I get myself into a situation where I'm in a session and maybe I feel like there's some we're not getting what we want, and the feedback that I'm the words that I'm hearing from my client are not translating correctly. And in those scenarios, what I generally will ask people to do is just use whatever language you feel like fits to describe it. Just use words, throw them out, whatever words are popping in your head. It's sort of like a little bit like a Rorschach, you know, just like what words come to you when you see this image. And what I usually glean from that is, you know, it's like a little light bulb goes off at a certain point when they say a certain word, and I catch what they actually mean, what they've been saying to me that entire time. You know, it's like in a flashback where you're like, all of a sudden you understand what that line of dialogue was about. And so it's a little bit of a like a translation process, or a psychological process where you're trying to kind of interpret language to describe something that doesn't necessarily have a clear cut language to describe it. It's a much more emotional yeah. language.
I mean, I always like to say, if you want to be a better colorist, think like an editor, because you really what ends up happening is you figure out what the story should be. Mm-hmm. And if you figure out what the story should be, then you know what the focus on which character is, you know, how one scene feeds into another scene, and how you can how you can show things in their best light as well. Who the focus of the scene is supposed to be, and who's supposed to be in the background, and all that. So, you coming from being an editor, I think that probably played a pretty big role as well.
Oh, definitely. I mean, as an editor, you know, you get yourself into a real jam when the client feedback on a cut is, oh, I need three less frames here. This feels too fast, or I need four more frames here. When you start getting that kind of feedback from a client that's very technical, you're probably not doing your client the best service, because they might have issues with the way the cut is flowing, but they don't necessarily know the technical solution to it. That's your job. And so if they're trying to tell you the technical solution, it's very likely that they're going to be misinterpreting or miscommunicating something. Where if they give you an emotional piece of feedback, if they say to you, oh, that scene just feels like it's too slow, or that one line makes that guy seem so-and-so. He just feels a little bit like an asshole in the scene. Or there goes our There goes our rating. I just don't sympathize with the character in this scene. With that kind of emotional feedback, you can build on and you can say, okay, well, let's tighten up the dialogue. Let's cut out this line. Let's add this line back in from this other take. Or he's a little more sympathetic here. Let's let him give this look. Or let's, you know, all these sort of editorial modifications that you can make that affect the emotional response. It's the same thing in color. Color is very much an emotional medium. And so if I'm getting technical feedback, that can more often than not be incorrect. And if I'm just applying there, if I'm getting feedback, like, unless it's a really experienced DP that has a lot of color timing experience and understands, like, +3 red is going to do this. If the feedback I'm getting is, oh, that needs a little bit more red, as opposed to, oh, that feels too cool or too sad or too, this feels too serious and it needs to feel more romantic or more elegant or more dreamy or whatever. If I'm not getting that those emotional words as feedback, there's a strong possibility that we're probably going to be just sort of frustrating ourselves.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of ways to do that with people too. I mean, just general techniques is, you know, again, people won't always offer that information up directly. Sometimes you have to ask them a lot of open-ended questions or, you know, get people to start talking about stuff. And luckily when I'm on a symphony, I end up having a lot of rendering. So that gives me a little time to just turn around and say, you know,
interesting.
You know, and some of it is just getting people to be comfortable and being chit-chatty.
This is an important part, which is that we have to, it's not just a matter of being a pleasant person, but it actually leads to better feedback from your client if they feel comfortable talking to you. If you can talk to them about what you did over the weekend and they, you know, you can crack a joke and make them smile or make them laugh and put them at ease, they're going to give you much more honest and sort of direct and maybe more helpful feedback. You know, sometimes the most helpful feedback is sort of an imprecise bit of feedback. Like, you know, sometimes we'll just be watching down a cut and my client will go, something doesn't feel right about that shot. And I'll know exactly what shot they were talking about. And we can go and like look at it and like, yeah, something feels wrong about it here too. Let me try a couple other things. And we get to the place that we need to be. Where if they felt even slightly uptight in that situation, or if they felt like that they couldn't really talk to me, they might not say anything. If they couldn't give you that exact feedback, if they couldn't say to you, that shot feels too contrasty or whatever it might have been, they might not say anything at all because they feel like they couldn't talk.
Yeah. Do you guys have any horror stories from your sessions that you can talk about with the world?
Do you, Josh?
Do I? It's a good question. You know, the stuff that comes up a lot of the time are the things that make you feel uncomfortable, like you have two people arguing behind you. That's a pretty common one too. And you are kind of like, well, I'll just be over here moving the knobs while you guys do your, you know, and they're like, no, this has got to be this way. No. And, you know, that's kind of, and that happens more than you would think. And the way that I approach that is just try to be diplomatic and be like, okay, you have to be the therapist at that point. Like, okay, this guy is saying he wants this and this guy is saying, why don't we do this? Why don't we kind of find somewhere in the middle to, you know, you're like the mediator sometimes. But that happens.
Sure. Sometimes two people are arguing about something and they're actually asking for two unrelated things. You know, they'll be like, oh, it needs more contrast. It needs to be cooler. Well, we can do both. Those things are not diametrically opposed. We can kind of, we can hit both those points. I think you hit the nail on the head there, which is you need to be a little bit of a therapist. You know, being a colorist is, you know, it's half or one third technical, one third artistic, and then one third kind of emotional and psychological, right?
Jason, do you have anything like that?
You know what? I don't have any horror stories, but what I would say that I've been through is people who drag things out mostly through revisions to a great extent that I sort of absorbed for the betterment of the project, but that internally I was getting really sort of frustrated with. So I would say that's the way that it sort of appeared or manifested itself for me, was the idea that, you know, where we were, have you guys ever been 6 or 7 revisions deep? you know, and stuff keeps on coming up that they want to touch. I would say that that's sort of the horror story. I haven't had any situations where, you know, I went and did a lot of work and then all of a sudden, you know, there was somebody at the other end of the conference call that appeared and decided to make everybody understand that we were in a completely wrong ballpark. You know, I haven't had that. Sure. That's the one that I hear a lot from people. But you know what I'll bring up just to bring this around is I've recently been able to sit in on some color sessions where I saw fantastic clients. And that was really eye-opening. And what I mean by that is people who were really skilled at being in a color session and actually not being a liability, but moving it along. And that was really interesting to see. And what I'll say is that those people had two things going on that were really interesting. First, they were often juggling a tremendous amount of incoming communication. So for instance, they'd have a laptop or a phone and you could see that they were working. And let's say that they would be playing down a reel for a film. I actually saw a really nice like a World War II period piece being graded. There were moments when you thought that the client wasn't even looking and they'd be like, stop. And the colors would stop the reel and he'd be like, go back two shots. And he'd say, oh, see that upper right-hand corner? Yeah, what's that? And it would be a thing. Now, you know, who cares what it was, but they caught it while they were in the middle of being on the phone and on their laptop.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, you know? And then the thing was, is that these people knew very well and were experienced with, you know, the more that they noodle with it, they're not necessarily making it better and they're also spending money. And so one of the things that these sort of like super clients seem to understand very clearly is that time was money and they were appreciative of that.
Yeah.
And it was sort of wonderful to see that it can go the other direction too. So.
Yeah, I will second that opinion of super clients. I think they're rare, but they're great experiences to work with people like that who are astute and aware enough and also really, really, really excellent, and this is the skill that I think you were describing, arbiters of what is important, what is a good use of time, of that triage process. That's something I think as a colorist you have to bring, right? As an online editor, you have to bring to the session, and I think clients that appreciate that or understand that or have respect for that skill or that ability are just invaluable. They're great clients to have.
Some of the other things that happen in the Bay too, this happened pretty early in my career as well, is not knowing how to do something that somebody asks you to do, because once somebody has that doubt that you might not know how to do everything that they want, then you got a real problem.
Yes. It's I think the way to handle that is, one, knowing your goods, right? So know as much as you can going in. But also don't pretend to know something that you're totally off the mark about,
right,
or you could be totally off the mark about. Because that's where you really lose respect and you really lose authority, is where you sort of get called out on not knowing something, and then that's it. That client just is not going to trust you for anything ever again. So it's important to know what you know. Know what you don't know. No, the known knowns, the known unknowns, and then watch out for the unknown unknowns, which are that's where you can kind of get into a trap. And if you do come across an unknown unknown, don't be afraid to stand up and say, "Let me look into this. Give me 5 minutes. Let me just check this out." Because, or let me ask somebody about this or whatever. Because the worst thing you can do is say, "Yeah, sure, we'll do that," and then you're not delivering what they want, and they're gonna call you out on not knowing it.
Or telling somebody that it just can't be done. No, that can't be done.
Right.
Because I've taken stuff over from other people who say, oh, that can't be done, and then I turn it around in 20 minutes. They're like,
yeah,
oh, I guess it can be done, and they never go back to them.
I've had many, many, many a client that I've won over because somebody else said that something couldn't be done, and I was like, no, that's like, that takes 20 minutes, it's fine, it's not a big deal. And then doing it, and then they're like, that's it. You've won their business, right? You've won that client. So, don't be that guy.
One thing that's really interesting, though, is that if you're in a situation where something's going to be very difficult, let's say they're asking you to do something that's almost borderline VFX or something like that.
Or VFX, just flat out VFX. I get those requests.
Yeah. One of the things that you'll do, that you can do, is if you at least give it a very honest try. Mm. Because what happens is if you try to accomplish what they're talking about, the client will really appreciate the idea that you put the effort in. But then what happens is it doesn't become a blame game at a point. It becomes, even in the client's own mind, as they see you trying to accomplish something that might be difficult. Like, let's say you're doing a complex sky replacement or whatever it might be. What you want to do, hopefully, is not let it be your fault that you can't do it. What it turns into is the idea that this is inappropriate for a color session.
Yeah, that's really good.
And a lot of clients will go and say, hey, okay, this looks involved. Let's flag this and we'll move on. Thanks for giving it a whirl. I appreciate it. But let's do something else more productive. And if you can get that, that's like an automatic win in a situation that might have been very dire for you initially.
Yeah, I think that my strategy in those kinds of situations is to I have a lot of my clients that ask me for those kind of VFX things, I have an established rapport for. I've done things for in the past where they know that I do have some VFX capability in the color session. So we've done like clone operations before, or we've done little like, you know, wire removal stuff or keying or whatever. So they know that there's some VFX. And then all of a sudden they're asking for, oh, can you take that car out of the background that crosses axis and has a bunch of reasons why that isn't really possible. And what I find myself doing is instead of saying let me give it a try, because they know that I know what I can do, I say, well, we could do it here, but it's going to take me 3 hours to do this one shot, and it's probably not going to be perfect. Where we could just export the shot, send it out to VFX, and have somebody do it in the flame or in whatever, and we'll bring the shot back in, and it'll be done right, and we won't be futzing around with it in the color session, wasting our time here. What's a better use of your time? And generally, clients will go, well, yeah, that is a better use of my time and money than trying to do it here. Yeah. You know, doing it in 1 hour in a VFX program versus doing it in 2 hours in a color session. Go with the VFX session. No reason not to. Jason, I mean, you mentioned the idea of projects with a lot of iterations and maybe an excessive number. I'm taking a stab in the dark here, but would those projects you were describing, would they have been remote projects by any chance?
Yeah, actually, the one I'm thinking of was a remote project, and that's a good call, I guess. What makes you lead you to that?
Well, because that's where I feel like you run a tremendous risk of that, where people are reviewing at home and they're not getting ownership of the process in the room, right? I think that's the biggest hazard you run into is. Half of our job in terms of the client outcome is getting the client to feel like they own the product. If they feel like they own it, they're going to defend it, they're going to fight for it, and they're going to feel proud of it. They're going to feel accomplished by it. So it's somewhat difficult when you're doing a remote session. You're getting phone notes, or you're getting email notes about what the issues are that the client wants to address, or what the overall look is that they're going for, and then you're sending those review files back and forth. I think that's where you get into the situation where the client starts doing the kind of second guessing that they might be doing in the room that you could very, very quickly sort of work out. They're doing that second guessing remotely, and they're asking for another revision, and then another revision, and then another revision, and then another revision. So you get in this endless loop of kind of doubt, self-doubt, and second guessing that just totally kills the process. This is why I'm a big believer in client attend. You know, I will take a client attend session any day over a remote session. I think it really is beneficial to everybody. And we do. I mean, we have some remote capabilities. I know, Jason, you sometimes work with a place that is doing some remote sessions as well. I think we're using kind of sort of similar technology. We use a streaming system to be able to do remote sessions with clients, and those have been fairly productive in that where, you know, when we're streaming to a client and they're watching the output and they're watching playback and we're maybe a second removed or 2 seconds or 3 seconds removed from where they are, that feedback is almost instantaneous, and it's the second best thing to actually being in the room and actually getting that immediate feedback on what we're doing.
I think one of the new arts definitely will be how do you handle clients, you know, literally over the phone. I'm assuming you are conference calling when you are doing your remote sessions. And I know a lot of people that have, you know, spoken on, you know, forums and things like that using remote grading and resolve, or if they're sending a signal, you know, like some sort of, you know, SDI over fiber or whatever. They're in a situation where, you know, they don't have that person-to-person contact, but what they do have is literally just the voice across the line. Yep. And it's you know what it's a lot like? If you have ever tried to troubleshoot something for a friend or a client, even over the phone, you know, color grading over the phone has a lot of the same limitations, you know? And, you know, it's like, okay, lower left, the window button, you know, it's like you get into that lack of detail and immediacy has to be overcome. And, you know, this really reliant on your communication skill to break through that.
Yeah, it helps a lot when you have an in-person rapport already. And so you have that shorthand and that kind of common language already. If you've got that established, then that remote session will tend to go a lot more smoothly. It's not the best fit for the kind of the very micro focused or very uncertain client, the client that hasn't quite worked out what they want. That remote session may not be a perfect fit, because if you do run into those sort of more emotional components of a session, I think they become somewhat difficult. You know, it's much harder to read body language or to read facial expressions. Sometimes some of the best feedback I get in a color session is just like a gesture. You know, somebody will just kind of look at a shot and go, like, you know, make an exasperated gesture with their hands, you know, in response, and they're like, yeah, I know, it's like, oh, that's so frustrating, we'll figure it out, you know. But that's valuable feedback, and you're not necessarily getting that in a color session. I do I will add that, so we generally at least at the top of the session, we will do a Skype, like a video call, not always Skype, but a video call where I can actually see the client, kind of establish a rapport, talk a little bit about what they want, if they have any issues that they would definitely want to address, and actually see their feedback a little bit for at least part of the session. That becomes less valuable once the lights are killed and, you know, we're in full color mode. But it's certainly, I think, even for a remote session, it's important to establish that sort of personal connection.
Yeah, I think the thing that you're sort of describing in a sense is, you know, if you're having to build initial trust, mm-hmm. You know, over a conference call, that's really tough, because you don't get those, you know, inputs like a client that has sort of his you know, hands in the air or some sort of gesture that would have been good. Because what's really critical, especially when you're building trust, is when things are going in the wrong direction, you need to sort of know that so you can save it and send it in the right direction.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of remote sessions it'll be interesting to see how that sort of art evolves, with the idea that there are people in the future we may not meet that we'll be working with, but we still have to go through that same process, because, you know, it's human beings dealing with human beings, you know.
Well, I'll say one thing we do with our remote sessions, we have partner facilities that will actually host the remote sessions for us in some cases, and it helps a lot to have like a producer or a point person there in the session that can kind of maybe, you know, even just stepping in and sort of asking if they want a drink or if they want, you know, something to eat or whatever. That kind of interaction can help smooth things over quite a bit. They can also kind of give me feedback in terms of what was their mood when they walked in. You know, the way a client walks into a session a lot can mean a lot in terms of how that session is going to go. If the person walking into a session is frantic or frazzled, or looks like they're having a bad day, or they just got rained on, or, you know, if somebody is maybe not in the best mood at the start of a session, doesn't seem like they're in the best mood at the start of a session, at the beginning you make a real effort to sort of get them in a better mood, right? Can we get you anything? You want some tea? Oh, it looks like you got a little wet. Let me get you some. I have a spare pair of socks. You want those? Like, you can have, like, whatever, you know, whatever interaction, just like.
Note to self, keep spare socks in the room. Thank
For
you.
Real? No, that's a
that's a New York thing. I don't know how we're going to do that. We don't need that in L.A., right, Jason?
You guys don't.
Well, it's a spare suntan. I don't
know. Well, or like I keep Tylenol and aspirin in my room, like in a. I keep it for myself mostly, but I have it there. You know, if somebody's like, oh, I have a little bit of headache, I'm like, you want some Advil? You want some aspirin? I have Airborne. Like, I mean, this stuff seems kind of weird and silly, but it's just like, it's just giving somebody that kind of personal experience and personal attention that says, I care about the overall experience that you're going to have here, that it's not just what is the picture going to look like, but you need to feel like you're comfortable and you need to feel like you've had a positive experience and you're in good hands, and not just in terms of the way your picture looks, but just in general. Yeah. I think that that's really important in a session.
One image of a wand that's going to be burned in my brain forever is the picture of you pouring the big glass of milk with the plate of cookies for that session. For
Cookie
Baby.
Monster. Yeah.
That was really It just says a lot about how you attend to your clients. You know what I mean? You're like, hey, I get you. I get what this is about, and I'm going to have fun with you. And we're gonna.
I want to have fun too, right?
Absolutely.
I'm gonna enjoy some cookies as well, and I'm a big fruit eater. I love fruit, and but I'll go in the morning. Like, I'll go and pick up some fruit from like a market near us, and like I'll have that for clients and for me. Like, well, I'll be snacking on cherries all day, and because I love cherry, I'm like allergic to cherries, but and they make my throat itch, but I will eat them anyway because I love them that much. And it's like when clients come, I'm like, oh, I have some cherries, man, they're really good this year, this is a really good batch. Like, just that interaction of like, here, I want to share something that I like with you. Immediately, clients go, you know, oh, this guy, you know, he's being nice and he's being pleasant. And the same thing as having somebody over to your house. I mean, you know, if you have somebody come visit you, you know, you offer them a drink and you offer them, you know, a snack, or you share whatever you're having, they're having, right. You know, whatever. That sort of experience is a big part of the color experience. It's like, we're in this together.
Right.
That's what I want you to. If you walk away with one thing. From kind of meeting me or coming into my room, I want you to feel like I am a team member, and we together are tackling this. It's the two of us against the world.
Right. I mean, facilities used to have like hospitality services.
Yeah.
In a lot of the rooms, freshly baked cookies and drinks and espresso bars and all of that.
Yeah,
I mean, it really goes a long way. You'd be really surprised how that little thing goes a really long way.
Yeah, no, it makes it. I mean, that's particularly with like the agency clients. Like, that's part of why they go to like the bigger color shops, is because they still get that kind of service. And I, you know, I try to run a facility where we try to put the value on the screen, right? You know, within reason. I want you to have a good experience. I want you to feel comfortable. I want you to feel like you're in a place that you can kind of, you want to hang out in. But I also I want you to feel like the value here is what is coming out of it, what we're producing, and not, you know, some balcony with a view, right? it's not in the girl. The money's not going into the girl that's bringing you the espresso.
Right.
It's going into what's going on the screen.
But what you're saying is, I can write off my Mad Men style bar in the suite.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's absolutely a legitimate write off.
Okay, good. Good to know.
And I'm not going to tell you whether or not I have a Mad Men style bar in the suite.
Yeah, it could get messy. That's all I'm
going to
say.
It requires discretion. Yeah. But I will say one other thing, which is, I think, so we touched on the idea of like remote grades. I wanted to maybe touch on the idea of like one thing I find actually more difficult than the client sessions is the unsupervised sessions. It's the sessions where the client, I have maybe a trust or have had some experience with the client, and they hand me something, a spot or a video or whatever, and they're just like, do your thing, and send it back to us. And I'm like,
make it look cool.
Make it look good. And like, I've been lucky, you know, knock on wood, that I've had success with those kinds of jobs where they were ultimately happy with the product. But I find those jobs to be the most difficult, because the only person second guessing me is me.
Yeah.
At that point. And I do that a lot. I'm a terrible client. I am the worst client I have.
Yeah, I think that's true of most colors as well. Especially if they don't have somebody going, you know what, don't go crazy with that. It's okay. Move on.
Or just like, that looks great. And I just, I need that external reinforcement. Otherwise I'm lost.
Yeah.
Like my wife has to constantly tell me how great I am in order for our relationship to work. No, that's not true.
The thing is, when you get people that say that, I come at it from two directions. One would be somebody gives you it and they go, look, you're the colorist. You know a lot about how this stuff should look and how you could make it look good. Or the other side of it is, look, I just want to get this done. Even it all out, make sure it's presentable, and then send it out. You know what I mean? So, and ideally, you don't want to do the jobs that are just make it legal. Or as some people say, be the human legalizer.
Yeah. No, I turn those jobs down.
Yeah.
But then you have other situations where you have like an established relationship with a client and you've done work with them in the room before. They've been really happy with the work and they just feel like you can handle it. You know, we're really happy with the work. We're happy with what you've done. Here's another one. And, you know, we're going to be busy that day. It's going to be hard for the DP to come in or the director has to do something else or whatever, but we think you can handle it. So do your thing. And you don't want to be like, no, please come in. I need you. But it's sort of, I find myself spending more time second guessing myself in those situations than in situations where the clients are giving me immediate feedback.
Yeah.
If I'm playing with something and I'm building something out or building a lookout or trying something in a look and the client is there and they go, even if they don't say anything, like that response tells me I'm going in the right direction. I'm getting somewhere where that they find interesting. And I might have three or four more ideas that I want to show them before we settle in on an idea, but at least I know I have something that's going to be acceptable.
Right.
Where if I'm working by myself, I'm just like, is that too green? Do I need to, should I raise the blacks here? Somebody. I will call people in to look at stuff.
Yeah.
To give me some feedback. Just any feedback. Like, take a look at this. What do you think? And even just going like, it looks good. Looks good. Like, that at least is a little takes the edge off a little bit, but those to me are tougher than the client attempts for sure.
Let me ask you this for both of you. If you have a client who's completely happy, but there's something about the project that you don't like, mm-hmm. What do you guys do? Do you bring up the point that let's say it's a strong one. Let's say that they're crushing. Like a romantic movie or something like that. And they're crushing the blacks beyond what you feel is appropriate, but they're really happy with it. But you feel like there's a chance when this plays on screen that it will really come out once it's up on a large, in a large theater.
Sure.
do you guys bring up the idea that you feel like it's overly crushed, possibly needing a revision on every shot in the film to make it less dark? Or do you let the client be thrilled and carry on with the idea that you've made them extremely happy with what's happened so far?
I let them know. I'll just say like, hey, what do you here? I'm going to save this as a version, but let's try this. Let's see, what do you think of this? Because over here, you're kind of throwing away a lot of detail and you might be able to bring a little bit of that up. And if they go, nope, I want it to be crushed. Then you go, okay, moving on.
Well, you have your answer. Yeah. I think that's, Josh's point is right there. I would just say that I might not even say anything like, I think you're crushing the detail, but I would just say, I would say, can we just look at one thing? I just want to see something and show them and see if I can get a good response. And, and if it's something that's consistent throughout the film, that's usually something you can address with like a global adjustment, you know. The other thing I would say is just that you brought up the idea of like, you know, you're worried about how it's going to look on another display or how this is going to translate. If it looks okay on this, how's it going to look on that? It really helps. It makes a huge, huge difference when you're grading on the primary medium that you want to target. So if, you know, we have a DI theater for exactly that purpose. The other thing is, I think you brought the example of the idea that blacks are too crushed. I would just, my reference for that would be like show them on a MacBook Pro Retina, where the blacks are always crushed, so it's going to crush the blacks even more in that scenario. I think that's a good kind of showcase for like, see, it can go wrong. You're right on the edge of what's acceptable. Let's take you off the edge a little bit, so that when you're on a device that maybe is going to push you further off the edge, you're not falling off the cliff. You're just going back onto the edge. One other thing, I mean, you're describing obviously a client that's satisfied with something you're not happy with, but what about the reverse? What about a situation where a client is just unhappy? You're just not able to kind of effectively satisfy what the client wants. What do you do in that scenario?
Keep trying.
Cry.
Apologize profusely and get them drunk.
You're not off the mark there. I think you might be onto something. Drinking helps a lot in a color session, let me tell you.
Well, one thing that I always find is when I'm at an impasse myself, mm-hmm. or I assume that when a client is at an impasse as well, especially if you've been digging away at a project for a while, that's the time to take a break and get outside for a minute your eyes reset. And try to just clear your head.
Yes.
You know,
when we do features, you know, we have like multi-day long sessions. There isn't a session that goes by where we don't step out. I don't step out or ask the client to step out. That's one thing that happens over and over again where the client's is not seeing something they like, or you feel like their feedback is just kind of going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Like they're not, it's not catching where they want, or they're feeling uncomfortable with something. Colorists know this. You know, you refresh your eyes. You look at something else for a little while. You kind of clear your eye space, your mental space. But clients don't necessarily know that, and that's something important to keep in mind. So getting them out, I will frequently say, like, hey, you want to grab some coffee? I really got to step out. I'm feeling a little stuffy in here. Let's go outside together. Yeah. And I'll make it about me, but really it's about getting them out a little bit and kind of having them refresh their eyes.
Yeah. I mean, it's also asking them some questions like, you know, taking a break, getting out of that space and just going, okay, like what is bothering you about this? What if we could do something
without looking at it,
right?
Tell me what's bothering
you. If you were on set and you could have done things different, how would you have done it? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. In a perfect world, what would happen here?
Yeah.
And that does help sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, you might not be able to get, like, in the perfect world solution for them, but you might be able to get something closer to the perfect world solution where they're happy.
What you're driving at is what they really want, too. I mean, and that's what part of a lot of this stuff is just figuring out what the hell they want out of it.
I think it also depends on the kind of session you're talking about, because mm-hmm. if you're talking about a feature session where you're going to have multiple days, sometimes I'll just be like, you know what, let me work on it the rest of the afternoon on my own, come back tomorrow, we'll come back to it. Because you can do that in a feature scenario where you're working over, you know, 7, 8, 10 days. In a commercial scenario, that's not really an option. So in a commercial scenario, it's a little bit trickier. But sometimes the clients just, dude, sometimes I have bad days and I'm just not in a great mood and I'm not feeling it. And sometimes clients have bad days and they're just not in a good mood and they're not feeling it. And it's a little bit tough because we're dealing with such emotional response to separate the kind of emotional state that you're in at that moment from how you're responding to the image. You know, it really does influence the way you respond to the image. So doing everything you can to kind of facilitate your client sort of being in a better mental space helps. I find, you know, one thing that happens in a color session, and it happens also in an editorial session, is people, like, you're in there for hours at a time, you're in a dark room, I usually have some music on, it's kind of a relaxed atmosphere, you're sort of being mellow, and people just kind of start talking. And as a colorist, that's great, you know, if you can get somebody sort of communicating about anything, it's good. So I'm usually all too happy to sort of talk to people about, you know, I'll tell people stories about what's going on in my personal life, or I'll say something, a funny story about my pets, or, you know, I'll ask them how their kids are and ask for stories about their kids, or, you know, or talk about whatever. But sometimes that can have a big impact on somebody's mood, right? If something's going on personally that's making them feel crappy, sometimes just getting them to talk about it a little bit will make them feel better. Like, just, tell me what's going on. Oh, you had a fight with your girlfriend or your boyfriend or whatever. Well, I hear something similar happened with my wife. And that sounds very personal, but it's not. We're dealing with a personal environment. You know, you're dealing with people, really. And so if you can be accessible and pleasant and thoughtful towards another human being, they'll come around, you know, maybe not right away, but eventually.
Okay, here's one for you guys. This happens from time to time as well, is when somebody asks you to do something in the session that you absolutely 100% disagree with, but it's their session and it's their, mm-hmm. it's what they want out of it. And I think that that's the most difficult thing you have to deal with, when somebody's like, yeah, I want this to be upbeat. And it's about, like, somebody's dog dying or something.
Right.
And you're like, really?
Yeah.
That's the way we're going to do it. And so, yeah. I mean, on one hand, I mean, I always go back to they're spending the money with me. This is their time. They can handle it however they want.
But do you find that affects the way you kind of see that client? Will you avoid sessions with them necessarily?
I think that it's pretty obvious when it's not socially working between two people too, that it's not, it's just not working.
Yeah. And that happens.
But,
right?
It does. And it's okay to not use somebody. And I've said that to people before. It's like, it's okay. If you want to go to somebody else, that's fine. But I think that's one of the hardest things you have to deal with in the supervised session is when they want to, you're not jiving. They want to do something completely different than what you envision. And it, to me, sometimes it just means they don't trust your instincts on how you want to do things, or it's not you, it's me.
Yeah, it could just be a difference of opinion, I think. I think that's legitimate to say, like, you know what, I'm probably not the right person for the job here, and there might be somebody better suited for this. That's a sort of the straightforward way of handling it, isn't it? Like, just to say, yeah, I might not be the right colorist for you for this kind of work. Like, I don't think this is my wheelhouse necessarily, but here's a friend of mine who is capable and does that kind of, might be better suited for this project. And not only that, but then you pass on some good karma by sending the work to somebody else who might actually like doing the work, might find it fulfilling and satisfying, yeah, in a way that you don't.
But more likely, they're going to be like, Juan, why'd you hook me up with this asshole?
Well, then that's you recommend like the person that person you don't really particularly like, right? I love my job. I love the work that I do. I like to keep it that way, you know. So I stuff that, you know, makes me unhappy or kind of like I feel like isn't where I should be spending my time, like, you know, I just don't I keep myself busy with other things. So I don't think it's unreasonable to say this isn't necessarily a good fit. I will say, going back to the previous topic about the idea of an unhappy client, this is probably an extension of that. This is an unhappy client too. As I find, if it's good work or a good client or work that I really want to be doing, I will go the extra umpteenth mile to make them happy. So if somebody's just having a bad day, I might just be like, I'll let you reschedule. There's no penalty. Let's reschedule for another day. Or, you know, I've had situations where not that the session went badly, but the session ended and we were done with the spot. And then I realized there was one shot where it was kind of bugging me, but we ran out of time. And there was another way to do it, and I'll go back and do it that way. And maybe I'll like it better, and I'll send it off to the client and just be like, hey, here's a updated version of that. I did it another way. See if you like it, of that one shot. And sometimes they're like, oh yeah, that spot shipped already. But even if it didn't, or if it did, they're still like appreciative that I cared enough to work on it after hours to get something maybe a little bit better, just because it bugged me that it wasn't perfect to my standards, you know, or it wasn't as perfect as I would have liked it to be. So I think doing that kind of stuff is really helpful. So if you have a client that maybe is having a bad day and the session's just not going well, you know, see if, even if it costs you a little bit, you know, see if you can reschedule, see if you can maybe give them a little more time later, see if you can maybe do something that's going to make them happier after they leave. You know, send them an email the next day just saying, hey, I know that session didn't go spectacularly, but I really think you're a great client. I love the work that we do. You know, I hope we see you again soon, and next time it'll be a lot better, I promise. You know, or anything like that to sort of retain that relationship, I think is a good thing to do. Cards, flowers, chocolates, candies, you know, whatever. Some of my clients, like, will do those kinds of things for me, because they're appreciative of the work that we do, and I try and do that, particularly with clients that I really appreciate their work, and I appreciate the work that we do. I try and make sure that they're happy with what's going on. Keep clients happy, I think, is the crux of our conversation here.
Well, on that note, everyone retain their clients at all costs, and hopefully it's a fun process. But yeah, this was an interesting conversation. I think a lot of people don't realize early on that you know, probably handling your clients is going to be 50% of your effort in terms of, you know, sort of being successful. But I think we covered a lot of bases here. And so what we'll do is we'll wrap it up, and I'll say I'm Jason Myris, a colorist in Los Angeles. You can find me on Twitter at Jason Myris or on my website at jasonmyris.com. And I'm also on Lift Gamma Gain, where we'll be talking about this and other things in the future.
And I'm Josh Petock, also a colorist in Los Angeles. You can find me on Twitter at Josh Petock or on my website at www.joshpetock.com.
And I'm Juan Salvo, colorist in New York City. I work out of the Color Space. You can find us at the Color Space, colourspace.com. Also juansalvo.com. Thank you so much for listening, and happy client relations.